Folks, it might be a Friday, what? But it's that time of week to get the proverbial view from the north. Ow! Find the many things he's up to. NBC Sports Northwest, talking ducks. He's doing that radioing thing for Rip City Radio. Doing the bridge with Bree Amaranthus and Serena Winters. Follow along on Twitter. The handle is at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things?
Things are great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I love this time of year. Actually wanted to play the rating game. You get championship week, selection Sunday in 48 hours. MLB season starts in 3 weeks. NBA teams jockeying for playoff seating. So, for a sports fan or those of us lucky enough to get paid to do this stuff, how high up the scale does this time of year rate for you?
You know what? I hadn't really thought about it until you just spelled all that out. It's a pretty good time. I'm not going to lie. Plus, we got Tiger Woods, y'all.
Yeah, look at this guy doing radio now, all of a sudden up on Tiger and golf and all kind of crazy things. You've had to expand the Fentress repertoire ever since you started doing radio.
I know, it's crazy. I would be up on Tiger though. He's trying to come back. It's good stuff, man. The brackets are always nice to start filling out. We can start filling those out on what, Monday?
Actually, Sunday night, if you download them.
Will they be available Sunday night?
Yeah. As soon as that selection committee makes their decision, you go to the major sites. For now, 7-8 years in a row, have pretty much been able to hold a burning of the bracket ceremony by the first Sunday. So, considering who I am, the brackets are all about gambling, what I do, you can't be worse at filling out brackets than me. You could only tie.
That's why you have to do multiples.
I've tried that.
You tried that and still failed? I've never not been in the hunt going into the Elite Eight by doing multiples.
Really? All right.
Yeah, you just have to be creative with it, and then you're good.
So we'll do the gauntlet of challenge, and with me, it's usually, I'm going to live and die with these teams, and I'm not giving up. And then you see the picture of the engine going out on the plane, and then the tail falls off, and then I spiral into the ocean. I want to talk some Oregon football. You wrote on the site, Mario Cristobal was coached for about an hour when they kicked off the Vegas Bowl. It's his first spring. The title of your piece was Reshaping. So what are some of the issues at the front of your mind that this team needs to straighten out if they're going to jump from that 7-8 wins to maybe be a player in the North?
Yeah, so I'm giving the entire staff a pass on the Vegas Bowl. That was an absolute circus of a time. It was so soon after Taggart left, and then Cristobal became the coach. I think he became officially the coach on a Friday, and then they had a game the next Saturday, so whatever day of the week it was. So they didn't have much time to sort of figure things out. So I'll just like ignore that and just say that now we're officially starting the Cristobal era on the football field. The first thing is, the players have to adjust. The players who've been around for a couple of years have to adjust once again to doing something, differently under a new leader. So that there's that adjustment. And then on the field, they've got some things to figure out if they're going to be really good. I do think, I kind of feel like 8 wins is a lock unless there's injuries. Like, they're going to win the first 3 games.
Right.
If the San Jose State bowling in Portland State.
Yeah.
That's just like they should easily win those 3 games. So then you need 5 conference wins to get to 8, and they don't have a very tough conference schedule. You have the 3 toughest teams that are going to play at home, Stanford, Washington, UCLA. So I think that's a given. The question is how they get to 10. And how they get to 10, man, is starting right now, man, figuring out receiver, figuring out running back behind Tony Brooks-James, figuring out defensive line depth. And there's a couple of spots to figure out in the secondary, but I feel like the secondary is going to be solid. I think they're pretty set back there. So all those things have to work out. Plus, what are they doing with the offense now? How many tweaks and changes are they going to make now that Taggart's gone and he was running that show? You know, what kind of things are Arroyo and Cristobal going to implement? Whatever we saw in the Vegas Bowl, that didn't work. So they can, you know, whatever they were trying to do it better. Now they have 9 months to figure it out. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating.
You also brought up a good point, and I ask, how important is it to understand? And this might actually be mostly for fans that, you know, it's not 2014 or 2015, be it the revolving door for the head coaches, the losing season, that this program's now viewed differently. Pac-12 is not all about Oregon anymore.
Not in the least. And I don't believe for a second that anyone in the Pac-12 is walking around going, man, we got to watch out for Oregon. Not that they don't respect Oregon or know that Justin Herbert's there, but I don't think there's a fear factor. I don't think there's an intimidation factor. I think Oregon has settled into where I believe they were going to settle into with or without Helfrich, and that is being just another good program that's going to have its moments, and then they're going to have their down moments. And there's enough holes, you know, I shouldn't say holes, but there's enough uncertainty for you know, me to believe that they're not going to be great this year, and that they're going to be good, they'll be a threat, but that, you know, the Pac-12 is not overly worried right now about where Oregon is or even where Oregon's headed. I mean, I don't think this is a situation where a few years ago where, you know, it definitely was, you know, the class of the conference. Right, now, they're just another good program that's going to have its days and have its bad days.
Talking with Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. So for those of us who will always look back fondly on the 1990s, I saw you and Dwight had Sinbad in studio.
Oh, in the house.
By the way, first of all, I almost broke down and cried when I realized he's 61 years old. I got to ask, what the heck is he up to? And I guess that had to be a really cool trip down memory lane.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. I've always liked Sinbad. You know, obviously, he's, you know, a tier below or a couple tiers below, like Eddie Murphy's of the world, Richard Pryor, stuff like that. But he's had a great career. He's done just about everything. He's got good staying power. He's still doing stand-up. He's appearing at the Helium Comedy Club tonight, twice, 7:30 and 10, and tomorrow, 7:30 and 10. I might actually go try and check him out tomorrow night.
Nice.
But it was just, yeah, it was just like, you know, it was a weird trip down memory lane having him in there. He was a really cool guy, very gracious, very funny, great conversationalist, fun to have him on. We had him on for two segments. We talked a lot of basketball. He's a big LeBron Cleveland guy. he thinks just like I did that Durant was a coward for going to to the Warriors. He went off about that. He's like, he was up 3-1, and then he ran to the Warriors. And I was like, yeah, Dwight, take some. Dwight doesn't buy all that stuff. And I always throw that stuff in Dwight's face. But no,
nice.
it was awesome. And one of the questions I really want to ask him about was the Bill Cosby factor, because here's a guy, you know, he grew up admiring Cosby, and he worked with Cosby on The Cosby Show and on the second Cosby attempt at a show. And he worked on A Different World, which was produced by Cosby, a spinoff of The Cosby Show.
Right.
And I was just like, what was that like for you, you know, watching that all come down? He was like, he said, I was just heartbroken. It was like to find out all that stuff about this guy that was such a huge icon and mentor and broke so many barriers. And, you know, and it was so, and like he brought up, you know, he's like, the guy was one of the most charitable guys in the history of entertainment. Like, he did so many things for, you know, for children and for all these things. He's like, that's just all forgotten now. He's like, he wasn't saying it shouldn't be forgotten.
I see.
It's just like, this was a guy that, I mean, think about it. Before all these allegations came out, he was one of the guys, he would say was one of the greatest guys in the history of entertainment in Hollywood, right?
Absolutely.
On and off, you know, the stage. And then, so he was just lamenting about that. And I thought that was a pretty powerful moment talking about that for him.
Most trusted man in America, multiple years. And, you know, if you think about prior Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy comedy versus Sinbad, Bill Cosby. I mean, let's pick about 8 words that could be the story right there.
They stayed away from the filth, flaring filth as much as possible, yeah.
All right, let's get to men's basketball. Man, they've had some bad losses this year. UConn, Oregon State, Washington State. And this tournament, they show up and play horrible offensively in back-to-back games, and they win both. So let's just say you got to give them credit for two things. They don't roll over and quit, and they sure as hell ain't boring.
Talk about grind. Well, that first half of Washington State was boring as hell. I don't know what you're talking about on that one.
I mean, the finishes.
What is this? I give them so much credit for grinding, man. They grinded those two games. They never went away. I believe they were going to come back Washington State the entire time. I was like, it's just a matter of time. Because Washington State, as bad as Oregon was playing, Washington State could not pull away and put them away. And I was like, at any minute they're going to go on a little mini run. You know, it might be a 6-0, 7-0. That's all I needed
right.
to take the lead because they were never really far behind. And so I wasn't surprised they pulled that one out. Utah, I thought, they're the top defensive team in the conference all year. And they had a decent lead, six or seven late. And I didn't think that Oregon was going to be able to pull that one out. But that play by McIntosh when he got banged and then muscled it up off the glass.
Oh.
I mean, that was just like, what? That was a big boy NBA play. You know, that was incredible. And so right when that happened, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're going to win. So I give them credit for grinding it out. And that's, you know, they don't play well enough to sort of run and be efficient and high-flying like they were the last couple of years. They're just not that team. They're just still young, and they got some guys like Elijah Brown who – can shoot it, but he also can brick it. know? but they're grinding, man, and it's kind of fun. It's ugly, but it's kind of fun to watch. And now they're playing a team in USC that they haven't beaten all year. But right now, I'm like, shoot, if they're within 3 or 4 points with 2 minutes to go, I'm putting my money on the Ducks.
Yeah, they're like the vampire. You got to put the stake through their heart to
exactly.
put them out of everybody's misery.
So here's the other thing: what the hell is wrong with people? Driving towards right at Wooten with the game on the line.
You know, if it wasn't as ridiculous as you think, when you watch it, that last 9 seconds, and all of a sudden it's like, are they really outside the perimeter going to drive? And it'd be different if it was one of these, you know, 6'9", 6'10", high wire acts who could dunk over him. But a little guard's going to drive at him with the clock running down, and he's not going to figure that out.
Exactly. And then Washington State does it. And you're thinking that maybe Utah watched the film or something. Like, whatever you do, don't go inside the paint because Wooten's going to swat your stuff into the stands. You know, and it's just hilarious. I'm like, that's not smart. What's he doing? Oh, swatted.
No, and to talk about, what's it called, telegraphing. All right, so
yeah, exactly.
Lastly, Trailblazers are on an 8-game win streak. Started with Golden State. They have some nice wins, OKC, T-Wolves. Lillard scoring like 32 a game since the start of February. I like the way Collins is coming along, good bench. Out of curiosity, and I guess they play Golden State tonight, how much is your city buzzing about this? And I guess, what's your read on this nice run they're having?
It's so funny. I remember a few weeks ago when they almost blew that lead to the Hornets, and Kemba Walker went off for 40, how mad Stotts was after that game. Then they came back, and they lost to someone. I can't remember who it was. And then they went on an East Coast trip, I think, came after that. And then they came back and got smacked around by Utah. And it was like, oh, my goodness, these guys are a train wreck. They're a mess. And then, boom. Just flipped the switch. And they're just they're unreal, and they're winning in a variety of ways. They're blowing a few teams out. They're also finding ways to close out wins late. Damian is going off in the fourth quarter on some teams. I've nitpicked some of the wins as being against teams without their stars, like Minnesota, with Jimmy Butler being out against mediocre teams, bad teams like Phoenix and Sacramento. You shouldn't need a fourth quarter heroic comeback to beat Phoenix. You shouldn't need 50 from Dame to beat Sacramento. But they strengthen the look of those wins with by beating OKC and by beating the Warriors to start that run. And so now they have another chance tonight to sort of, show what they're all about against the Warriors team that's going to be without Steph Curry, without Iguodala, without David West. You know, that's a lot of firepower they're going to be out without. And so, to me, I feel like the way the Blazers have been playing, they should win this game. And even though it'll be watered down a little bit with no Steph, they still, I think, would be beating what would be a 50-win team with what they have, because you have Durant and Clay. So I still think it'll be a quality win. So I want to see if Portland is able to go in there and take advantage of the situation and beat a really good team that they should defeat, given that Curry's out.
Well, obviously, I'm naturally slightly insulted. You didn't list the key quality win during the run.
Oh, my bad, my bad.
Beating my Knicks.
Yeah, that big win over Tim Hardaway Jr. and the Knicks. Oh.
Without Michael Zinger.
Is it Michael Beasley on that team, too, or something?
Does it matter? They'd probably be better off putting Willis Reed and Clyde out there right now in their 60s.
Exactly.
Brutal.
That's a pitiful looking team, man. Oh. You know what's funny, though? I sold my tickets right away for that game. Some guy was like, I'm a big Knicks fan, man. I know they suck, but I want to go see my Knicks. Will you take 150? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Come and get them.
That team, if for somebody who grew up back there, it doesn't matter. They've got a piece of our soul, and God help us all. Check them out. NBC Sports Northwest, Rip City Radio, The Bridge on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. AF, enjoy, and always appreciate your time, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.